It will find a way to return, if that is the plan.
What do you mean? Pedro asked.
I have had cases where the same soul, after a miscarriage or abortion, comes back to the same parents in their next baby.
Incredible. Pedro responded. His face appeared brighter now, not so guilty or embarrassed.
You never know, I added. After a few moments of contemplation, Pedro sighed again and crossed his legs, adjusting his pants.
We had shifted back into the history-taking mode.
What happened after that? I asked.
After graduation, I went back home. At first I worked in the factories, learning more about the business. Later on I came to Miami to run the business here and abroad.
I've been here since, he explained.
How is the business going?
Very well, but it occupies too much of my time.
Is that a big problem?
It doesn't help my love life, Pedro said, grinning. He was not entirely joking. Now 29 years old, he felt that he was racing past the time to find love, marry, and start a family.
Racing. But no prospects.
Are you having relationships with women?
Yes, he answered, but nothing special.
I haven't really fallen in love.
I hope I can. He added with some concern in his voice.
I will very soon have to return to Mexico and live there, Pedro mused, in order to take over my brother's duties.
Perhaps I will meet someone there, he commented without conviction.
I wondered if his mother's criticisms of Pedro's girlfriends and the experience of the affair and the abortion were psychological obstacles to a loving and intimate relationship.
We would look at those issues later, I thought.
And how is your family in Mexico?
I asked, lightening the mood while continuing to collect information.
They are well.
My father is more than 70 now, so my brother and I. Pedro stopped abruptly.
He swallowed and took a deep breath before resuming.
So I have more responsibility in the business, he concluded in a quiet voice.
My mother is also well.
He paused before amending his answer.
But they are both not coping well with the death. It has taken a great deal out of them.
They have grown much older.
And your sister?
She is sad also, but she has her husband and her children, Pedro explained.
I nodded my head in understanding.
She had more distractions to help her cope.
Pedro was in excellent physical health. His only complaint was of intermittent pain in his neck and left shoulder, but this problem had been present for a very long time, and doctors had not found anything unusual.
I've learned to live with it, Pedro told me.
I became aware of time.
Looking at my watch, I saw that we had run 20 minutes late.
My internal alarm clock was usually much more reliable.
I must have been really absorbed in the drama of Pedro's story, I rationalized silently, unaware that even more absorbing dramas were only now beginning to unfold.
The Vietnamese Buddhist monk and philosopher, Thich Nhat Hanh, writes about enjoying a good cup of tea.
You must be completely awake in the present to enjoy the tea.
Only in the awareness of the present can your hands feel the pleasant warmth of the cup.
Only in the present can you savor the aroma, taste the sweetness, appreciate the delicacy.
If you are ruminating about the past or worrying about the future, you will completely miss the experience of enjoying the cup of tea.
You will look down at the cup, and the tea will be gone.
Life is like that. If you are not fully in the present, you will look around and it will be gone.
You will have missed the feel, the aroma, the delicacy and beauty of life.
It will seem to be speeding past you.
The past is finished. Learn from it and let it go.
The future is not even here yet.
Plan for it, but do not waste your time worrying about it.
Worrying is worthless.
When you stop ruminating about what has already happened, when you stop worrying about what might never happen, then you will be in the present moment.
Then you will begin to experience joy in life.
Chapter 6, I hold that when a person dies his soul returns again to earth, arrayed in some new flesh disguise, another mother gives him birth. With sturdier limbs and brighter brain the old soul takes the road again.
John Masefield.
Pedro returned to the office 1 week later for his second appointment. Grief still tormented him, robbing him of simple pleasures and interfering with his sleep. He began by telling me about an unusual dream he had dreamt twice in the past week. I was dreaming about something else when all of a sudden an older woman appeared, Pedro explained. Did you recognize the woman? I asked. No, he answered immediately. She appeared to be in her 60s or 70s. She wore a beautiful white dress, but she was not at peace. Her face was anguished. She reached out to me, and she kept repeating the same words. What did she say? Hold her hand. Hold her hand. You will know. Reach out to her. Hold her hand. That is what she said. Hold whose hand? I don't know. She just said hold her hand. Was there anything more in the dream? Not really. But I did notice that she was holding a white feather in one hand. What does that mean? I asked. You're the doctor, Pedro reminded me. Yes, I thought. I'm the doctor. I knew that symbols could mean almost anything, depending on the unique experiences of the dreamer as well as the universal archetypes described by Carl Jung or the popular symbols of Sigmund Freud. This dream, somehow, did not feel Freudian. I responded to the "or the doctor" comment and its implied need to be answered. I'm not sure, I answered truthfully. It could mean a lot of things. The white feather could symbolize peace or a spiritual state or many other things. We will have to explore the dream, I added, relegating its interpretation to the future. I had the dream again last night, Pedro said. Same woman, same woman, same words, same feather, Pedro clarified. Hold her hand. Hold her hand. Reach out to her. Hold her hand. Perhaps the answers will come during the regressions, I suggested. Are you ready? He nodded, and we began. I already knew that Pedro could reach a deep level of hypnosis because I had checked his eyes. The ability to roll the eyes upward, trying to look at the top of the head, and then to allow the eyelids to slowly flutter down while keeping the eyes gazing upward is highly correlated with the ability to be deeply hypnotized. I measure how much of the sclera, or white part of the eye, is showing when the eye reaches its apex. I also observe how much white is showing while the eyelids slowly close. The more white showing, the deeper the person can go. Pedro's eyes had nearly disappeared into his head when I tested him. Only the tiniest part of the bottom rim of his iris, the colored part of the eye, remained. As his eyelids fluttered closed, the iris did not descend at all. He could reach a deep trance state. I was mildly surprised, then, when Pedro found it difficult to relax. Since is the eye roll test measured the physical ability to relax deeply and to reach profound levels of hypnosis, I knew his mind was interfering. Sometimes patients who are used to being in control have some initial reluctance to just let go. Just relax, I advised him. Don't worry about what comes into your mind. It doesn't matter if you experience anything today or not. This is practice, I added, trying to remove any pressure he was feeling. I knew he desperately wanted to find his brother. As I talked, Pedro relaxed more and more. He began to enter a deeper level. His breathing slowed, and his muscles softened. He appeared to sink even deeper into the white leather recliner. His eyes moved slowly under his closed eyelids as he began to visualize images. I took him slowly back in time. At first, just go back and remember the last pleasant meal that you have eaten. Use all of your senses. Remember completely. See who is there with you. Remember your feelings, I instructed. He did this. But he remembered several meals, not just one. He was still trying to maintain control. Relax even deeper, I urged. Hypnosis is only a form of focused concentration. You never give up control. You are always in charge. All hypnosis is self-hypnosis. His breathing deepened even more. You are always in control, I told him. If you ever get anxious while having a memory or experience, you can just float above it and watch from a distance, like watching a movie. Or you can leave the scene entirely and go anywhere you want, visualize the beach, or your house, or any other safe place for you. If you're very uncomfortable, you can even open your eyes and you'll be awake and alert back here, if you wish. This is not Star Trek, I added. You don't get beamed anywhere. These are only memories, like any other memories. Just like you remembered the pleasant meals. You are always in control. Now he let go.
I took him back to his childhood and Pedro smiled broadly. I can see the dogs and horses on the farm, he told me. His family owned a farm a few hours outside the city, and many happy weekends and vacations were spent there. The family was together. His brother was alive, vibrant, laughing. I remained silent for a few moments, letting Pedro enjoy more of this childhood memory. Are you ready to go even further back? I asked. Yes. Good. Let us see if you can remember anything from a past life. I counted backward from 5 to 1 as Pedro visualized himself walking through a magnificent door into another time and another place, into a past lifetime. As soon as I reached the number 1, I saw his eyes fluttering wildly. He was instantly alarmed. He started to sob. It's terrible. Terrible. He gasped. They're all killed. They're all dead. The remains of bodies were strewn everywhere. Fire had destroyed the village, with its odd rounded tents. Only one tent remained intact, standing incongruously on the periphery of the carnage and destruction. Its colored flags and large white feathers fluttered wildly in the cold sunlight. The horses, the cattle, and the oxen were gone. It was apparent that nobody had survived this massacre. The cowards from the east had done this. No wall, no warlords will protect them from me, Pedro vowed. Revenge would have to come later. He was numbed, hopeless, devastated. I have learned over the years that people in their first regression often gravitate to the most traumatic event in a lifetime. This occurs because the emotion of the trauma is so strongly impressed upon their psyches and carried by the soul into future incarnations. I wanted to know more. What preceded this horrific experience? What happened afterward? Go back in time within that lifetime, I urged. Go back to happier times. What do you remember? There are many yurts. Tents. We are a powerful people, he answered. I am happy here. Pedro described a nomadic people who hunted and raised cattle. His parents were leaders, and he was a strong and skilled horseman and hunter. The horses are very swift. They are small with large tails, he said. He married the most beautiful girl of his people, one with whom he had played as a child and whom he had loved as long as he could remember. He could have married the daughter of a neighboring chief, but he married for love. What is the name of this land? I asked. He hesitated. I think you call it Mongolia. I knew that Mongolia probably had a very different name when Pedro was there. The language was completely different. So how could Pedro, speaking from that time, know the word Mongolia? Because he was remembering, his memories were being filtered through his present-day mind. The process is similar to watching a movie. The present-day mind is very much aware, watching and commenting. The mind compares the movie's characters and themes with those of the current life. The patient is the movie's observer, its critic, and its star, all at the same time. The patient is able to use his present-day knowledge of history and geography to help date and locate places and events. Throughout the movie he can remain in the deeply hypnotized state. Pedro could vividly remember the Mongolia that existed many centuries ago, yet he could speak English and answer my questions while remembering. Do you know your name? Again, he hesitated. No, it does not come to me. There was little else. He had a child, and the birth was a great happiness not only to Pedro and his wife but also to his parents and the rest of the people. His wife's parents had both died several years before the marriage, so she was not only a wife to him but also a daughter to his parents. Pedro was exhausted. He did not want to return to the devastated village to once again confront the remains of his shattered life, so I awakened him. When a memory from a past life is traumatic and overflowing with emotion, it can be very useful to go back a second time, and perhaps a third. At each repetition the negative emotion is lessened and the patient remembers even more. He also learns more, as the emotional blocks and distractions are diminished. I knew Pedro had more to learn from this ancient life. Pedro was giving himself another 2 or 3 months to resolve his personal and business affairs in Miami. We still had plenty of time to explore the Mongolian lifetime in more detail. We had time to explore other lifetimes as well. We had not yet found his brother.
Instead, he had found another devastating series of losses: beloved wife, child, parents, community. Was I helping him or was I adding even more to his burden? Only time would tell. After one of my workshops, a participant told me a marvelous story. From the time she was a little girl, if she let her hand hang over the side of her bed, another hand would lovingly take hers, and she would be reassured no matter how anxious she was feeling. Oftentimes, when her hand accidentally went over the bedside and the grasp surprised her, she would reflexively jerk back her hand, and this always broke the embrace. She always knew when to reach for the hand and to feel comforted. There was, of course, no physical form under her bed. As she grew older, the hand remained. She married but never told her husband about this experience because it seemed so childlike. When she became pregnant with her first child, the hand disappeared. She missed her loving and familiar companion. There was no hand to take hers in that same loving way. Her baby was born, her beautiful daughter. A little while after the birth, while lying in bed together, the baby took her hand. A sudden and powerful recognition of that old familiar feeling flooded her mind and her body. Her protector had returned. She cried with happiness and felt a great surge of love and a connection that she knew existed far beyond the physical. Chapter 7, Wert thou that just made who once before forsook the hated earth, O tell me sooth, and camst again to visit us once more? Or wert thou that sweet smiling youth? Or any other of that heavenly brood let down in cloudy throne to do the world good? Or wert thou of the golden winged host, who, having clad thyself in human weed, to earth from thy prefixed seat didst post and after short abode fly back with speed as if to show what creatures heaven doth breed, thereby to set the hearts of men on fire, to scorn the sordid world, and unto heaven aspire? John Milton. Elizabeth seemed less depressed as she entered my office for her third appointment. Her eyes were brighter. "I feel lighter," she told me. "I feel freer." Her brief recollection of herself as a young boy swept off the boat had begun to sweep away some of her fears. Not just the fears of water or of the dark, but also deeper and more basic fears, fears of death and extinction. She had died as that boy, and yet here she was again, as Elizabeth. At a subconscious level, her grief might have been lessening because of the knowledge that she had lived before and would live again, that death was not final. And if she could spring back again, renewed and refreshed, in a new body, then so could her loved ones. So can we all, reborn to deal once more with the joys and hardships, with the triumphs and tragedies of life on earth. Elizabeth quickly went into a deep hypnotic trance. Within a few minutes, her eyes were sweeping from side to side under her closed lids as she scanned an ancient vista. "The sand is beautiful," she began, recalling a life as a Native American in the South, probably on the west coast of Florida. "It's so white. Almost pink at times. It's so fine, like sugar." She paused for a moment. "The sun sets over the big sea. To the east are large swamps, with many birds and animals. There are lots of small islands between the swamps and the sea. The waters are filled with good fish. We catch the fish, in the rivers and between the islands." She paused again, then continued. "We are at peace. My life is very happy. My family is large. I seem to be related to many in the village. I know about roots, plants, and herbs. I can make medicines from plants. I know about healing. In Native American cultures, there was no penalty for using healing potions or for other holistic practices. Instead of being called witches and drowned or burned at the stake, healers were respected and often revered. I took her forward in that lifetime. But no traumas emerged. Her life was peaceful and satisfying. She died of old age, surrounded by the entire village. There is very little sadness with my death," she noted after floating above her withered old body and surveying the scene below, "even though all of my village seemed to be there." She was not at all upset by the lack of grieving. There was great respect and caring for her, for her body and her soul. Only the sadness was missing. "We do not mourn deaths because we know that the spirit is eternal. It returns in human form again if its work is not finished," she explained. "Sometimes by carefully examining the new body, The identity of the previous body can be known. She pondered this concept for a few moments. We look for birthmarks where scars used to be and for other signs, she elaborated. Similarly, we do not celebrate births so much. Even though it may be good to see the spirit again. She paused, perhaps searching for the words to describe this concept. Although the earth is very beautiful and continually demonstrates the harmony and interconnectedness of all things. Which is a great lesson. Life is much harder here. With the greater spirit there is no disease, no pain, no separation. There is no ambition, no competition, no hatred, no fear, no enemy. There is only peace and harmony. So the smaller spirit, returning, cannot be happy to leave such a place. It would be wrong for us to celebrate when the spirit is saddened. It would be very selfish and unfeeling, she concluded. This does not mean that we do not welcome the returning spirit, she quickly added. It is important to demonstrate our love and affection at this vulnerable time. Having explained this fascinating concept of death without sadness and birth without celebration, she was silent, resting. Here again was the concept of reincarnation and the reunion in physical form of past life family, friends, and lovers. In all times and in diverse cultures throughout history, this concept has appeared seemingly independently. The dim memory of that ancient life might have helped to pull her back again to Florida, reminding her at the deepest levels of an ancestral home. Perhaps the feeling of sand and sea, of palms and of mangrove swamps called to her soul memory, helping to lure her back with a subconscious seduction. For that life had been most pleasant and filled with satisfactions not present in her current life. These ancient stirrings might have led her to apply to the University of Miami, which led to her scholarship and her move to Miami. This is not coincidence. Destiny required her to be here. Are you tired? I asked, returning my attention to Elizabeth, who was still resting peacefully on the recliner. No, she answered quietly. Do you want to explore another lifetime? Yes. More quiet. Once again we traveled back through time, and once again she emerged in an ancient land. This is a desolate land, Elizabeth observed after she had scanned the scene. There are high mountains. Dusty dirt roads. The traders pass on these roads. This is a route for traders going east and west. Do you know the country? I asked, looking for details. I did not like to intrude with too many questions for the logical, or left brain, part of the mind. Such questions could interfere with the immediacy of the experience, which is more a right brain, or intuitive, function. But Elizabeth was in a profoundly deep state. She could answer the questions and yet continue to vividly experience this scene. Details were important, too. India. I think, she answered hesitantly. Maybe just west of that. I don't think the borders are that clear. We live in the mountains, and there are passes the traders must go through, she added, returning to the scene. Do you see yourself? I asked. Yes. I'm a girl. About 15. My skin is darker, and I have black hair. My clothes are dirty. I work in the stables, tending to the horses and mules. We are very poor. The weather is so cold, my hands are so cold working here. Her face grimacing, Elizabeth made fists with both hands. This young girl was innately bright but uneducated. Life was grindingly difficult. Traders frequently abused her, sometimes leaving a little money. Her family was unable to protect her. Numbing cold and constant hunger plagued her life. There was only one bright spot in that young girl's life. There's a young trader who comes by often with his father and the others. He loves me, and I love him. He is funny and gentle, and we laugh a lot together. I wish he could just stay so we can be together all the time. This was not to be. She died at the age of 16. Her body, already worn out because of the bitter life and elements, quickly succumbed to pneumonia. Her family was around her when she died. As we reviewed this brief life, Elizabeth was not sad. She had learned an important lesson. Love is the strongest force in the world, she said softly. Love can grow and bloom even in frozen soil and in the harshest conditions. It exists everywhere, and all the time. Love is a flower for all the seasons. Her face was filled with a beautiful smile. A patient of mine, a Catholic attorney, had just finished recalling a European lifetime in the late Middle Ages. He had remembered his death in that lifetime, a lifetime filled with greed, violence, and deceit. He was cognizant that some of these traits had persisted into his current life. Now, reclining in the soft leather chair in my office, he was aware of floating out of his body in that medieval lifetime. Suddenly he found himself standing in a hell-like environment, amidst fires and devils. This surprised me. Although I had encountered thousands of past life deaths in my patients, no one had ever had an experience with hell. Almost invariably people find themselves drawn to an indescribably beautiful light, a light that renews and re-energizes the spirit. But hell? I waited for something to happen, but he reported that nobody paid any attention to him. He was waiting, too. Minutes passed. Finally a spiritual figure, whom he identified as Jesus, appeared and walked over to him. This was the first being who even noticed him. "Don't you realize that this is all illusion?" Jesus said to him. "Only love is real." And then the fires and the devils instantly disappeared, revealing the beautiful light that had been there, unseen, behind the illusion. Sometimes you get what you expect, but it may not be real. Chapter 8. It is the secret of the world that all things subsist and do not die, but only retire a little from sight and afterwards return again. Nothing is dead, men feign themselves dead, and in mock funerals and mournful obituaries. And there they stand looking out of the window, sound and well, in some new strange disguise. Ralph Waldo Emerson. Both Pedro and I needed to learn more about the sources of his underlying despair, which had been deepened even more by his brother's tragic death. We needed to understand more about the superficiality of his relationships. Were his mother's constant criticisms of his girlfriends and the guilt of the abortion blocking his love? Or had he just not yet met the right woman? The regression process is like drilling for oil. You never quite know where the oil is, but the deeper you go, the better your chance of striking it. Today we were going deeper. Pedro had only recently begun to remember his past lives. Frequently in the beginning, lifetimes are entered at their most traumatic points. This happened again. "I'm a soldier. English, I think," Pedro observed. "Many of us are brought in by ship to capture the enemy's fortress. It's huge, with high and very deep walls. They've filled the harbor with large rocks. We must find another way in." He became silent as the invasion was delayed. "Go ahead in time," I suggested. "See what happens next." I tapped him 3 times on his forehead in order to focus his attention and help him bridge the gap in time. "We have overcome the rocks, and we have breached the fort," he answered. He began to grunt and to sweat. "Little tunnels. We are running through them, but we don't know where we are going. The tunnels are narrow and low. We must go single file and bend over as we run." Pedro began to sweat profusely. He was breathing very rapidly, and he seemed extremely upset. "I see a tiny doorway ahead. We are running through this door. Ugh." He winced suddenly. "The Spanish are on the other side of the door. They're killing us as we come through, one at a time. They have stuck me with a sword," he gasped, holding his neck. His breathing became even more rapid. He was now gasping for air, and sweat was pouring from his face, drenching his shirt. Suddenly his movements ceased. His breathing became regular, and he was calm. As I dried his forehead and face with a tissue, the sweating began to diminish. "I'm floating above my body," Pedro announced. "I have left that life. So many bodies. So much blood below. But I'm above that now." He floated in silence for a few moments. "Review that lifetime," I instructed. "What did you learn? What were the lessons?" He pondered these questions from a higher perspective. "I learned that violence is a profound ignorance. I died senselessly far away from my home and loved ones. I died because of the greed of others. The English and the Spanish were both stupid, killing each other for gold in faraway lands. Stealing gold from the others and killing themselves for it. Greed and violence killed these people. They had all forgotten about love." He grew silent again.
I decided to let him rest and digest these incredible lessons. I, too, began to contemplate Pedro's lessons.